Very good, and thank you. I am David Whalen, professor of English and provost at Hillsdale College. I am honored to act as one of the trustees of the Philadelphia Society. We'll be starting our luncheon off at once, and we will begin with an invocation from Mr. Robert Russell. Robert?
25 years ago, Russell Kirk published an essay entitled with this question, Civilization Without Religion? He wrote, fundamentally our society's affliction is the decay of religious belief. If a culture is to survive and flourish, it must not be severed from the religious vision out of which it arose. The high necessity of reflective men and women then is to labor for the restoration of religious teachings as a credible body of doctrine. Thus, once again, our Philadelphia Society seeks divine blessing of our mission, discussion, and the sustenance with which we have been blessed in order to achieve what has been divinely intended. And so today, again, we bow our heads. Direct, we beg you, O Lord, our actions by your holy inspirations, and grant that we may carry them out with your gracious assistance, that every prayer and work of yours may begin always with you and through you to be happily ended. And may the King of everlasting glory make us partakers of the heavenly table. Amen.
Thank you, Robert. Please do begin your luncheon while I make a few announcements that Mr. Russell's invocation should put to rest any rumors after last night's invocation of St. Michael the Archangel that all prayers henceforth must be in Latin, Greek, or Hebrew. This is a very disciplined and well-trained audience. They know not to be quiet until someone taps glasses with silverware. So habits die hard. Thank you for your attention, but again, please do continue with your meals. My remarks will be fairly brief. We've had a good start, I think. This morning's membership meeting witnessed our outgoing president, Ingrid Gregg, mention the importance of civility and a sense of service in our political discourse. Civility and a sense of service sorely lacking, I think, in the public political discourse that we witness all around, but amply on display this morning in our sessions and last night as well. The Board of Trustees, I should announce, approved 9 persons for membership in the Society. Following our usual practice, invitation letters with acceptance forms will be sent to them shortly after this meeting. I don't know if all of these people are here, but let me read their names and then ask you to join me in welcoming them. The new members are Frank Buckley, Brittany Corona, Roger Custer, Alex Catarino de Souza, Jed Donahue, David B. Duvall, Matthew Gallagher, Jacqueline Otto Isaacs, and Robert Nathan. Again, please join me in welcoming these new members. At the membership meeting this morning, the following individuals were elected as trustees of the Society. Their term of service will end in 2019. These new trustees are Robert Alt, Alejandro Schaffwen, Brian Dmitrovic, David Durrell, and R.J. Bestrito. So again, please join me in welcoming these new trustees. In college and university administration, it is customary to say when someone moves into that office, you have my sympathies. Being a trustee for the Philadelphia Society is not terribly burdensome. You're working with very good people, but I should say you have my sympathies to the new trustees as well. It's pro forma. The Board of Trustees has also elected the following as next year's officers of the Society. Larry P. Arn will be our president for the 2016-17 year. Alejandro Schauffman will be the first vice president. Christopher Long will be the second vice president. And Lenore Ely will continue as secretary. David P. Storr continue as treasurer. And Daniel P. Hales will continue as assistant secretary. So thank you in advance for your service. And as some of you know already, the Board of Trustees elected a new distinguished member of the Philadelphia Society. This is a long-standing member, but he has moved into the distinguished ranks, and that is last night's speaker, Mr. George Gilder. So I don't know if he's here today, but congratulations to George. At this time, I'd like to ask Larry Arne, our incoming president, to approach the podium and present a few words about our future meetings. Dr. Arne.
I'm just here to do what Lenore tells me. So thank you all. You can imagine how proud I am to be the next president. For two reasons, mainly. It seems like I was hardly a boy when I first showed up around here, and now I'm ancient. And the other is, I do so admire what happened in Philadelphia in the late 18th century. And we celebrate that and try to keep that alive, and it's a great work. I apologize to all of you because I bring to an end the most glorious chapter in the history of the Philadelphia Society. For the last year, and in the first time in its history, it has been a matriarchy. And they bring such grace and efficiency. If you listen to Ingrid Gregg talk, I invite you to do that if you haven't. She has this uncanny knack to say the kindest thing and still get her point across. And I can't hope to emulate that. I'm crude and male. And Lenore have worked out how we're going to run things together, like my marriage. I'm going to decide the important things, and Lenore is going to decide the unimportant things, and Lenore is going to decide which is which. So my simple purpose is to induce you all to come to, where are we going to go? Philadelphia. September 30th to October 1st for a meeting. Write those dates down. I'm supposed to emphasize that. And to Dallas, March 31 to April 2nd. In Philadelphia, we're going to talk about the history and meaning of American political parties, which are certainly in a state of great turmoil right now. And we're going to try to understand against what that is unfolding from the past and what it means today. And as in the first Republican National Convention in Chicago in 1860, the whiskey will flow. So please come. At the 2017 spring meeting, we're going to raise the utopian seeming question now. Can the Constitution be saved? It's the opinion of this society that if it cannot be saved, then freedom and civilization cannot be saved. And so it's a pregnant question. There'll be lots of argument and lots of serious conversation by people highly skilled at both of those meetings. Please come, and I remind you, the whiskey will flow. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. I think he meant to say that the whiskey will flow at those meetings. You shouldn't be waiting around right now for whiskey. Our distinguished member, Ed Fulner, is going to both introduce to the Society and present our new Barron Award. Ed, could I ask you to approach, please?
Friends and colleagues, it It's a great honor for me to be able to announce and to present the very first Barron Award. First, a word about the Barron. The Barron was John A. von Cannon, our friend, colleague, and mentor, an early member of our Philadelphia Society. Before that, while still an undergraduate at Indiana University, he was the founding publisher of the American Spectator. He served for more than 30 years as vice president of the Heritage Foundation, except for a brief interlude when Bob Russell seduced him back to the Midwest for a couple of years, but he came back and we brought him back. The Barron was so special to all of us because of his commitment to the people and the institutions of the conservative movement. He passed last fall, and his passing left a real void in all of our lives. At that time, a member, longtime friend of the Barron, Neil Freeman, approached Ingrid and Lenore and proposed an award to be presented in the Barron's name. And the terms of the Barron Award are that it shall be given annually to that member of the Philadelphia Society who most faithfully exemplifies in word and deed the good fellowship, personal loyalty, intellectual integrity, and moral courage of our movement. Today, I'm honored to present the inaugural Barron Award to Jameson G. Campaign, Jr., a charter member of the Philadelphia Society. Sit down, not yet. I gotta say some nice things about you first. I said Jameson was a charter member of the Philadelphia Society. There are fewer than 15 individuals still listed on our society's membership roll as charter members. Charter members, of course, are defined as those who were present at the creation. They were invited to membership in the first year of our society's history some 52 years ago. Today, of the 250 original members, only 15 are, in G.K. Chesterton's words, still walking around. Of those 15, almost all have served on the Society's Board of Trustees, and all of those have proven their loyalty to the principles of ordered liberty and the free society that we share. Jim Campaign has served on our Society's Board of Trustees on three separate occasions over the decades. Before that, while an undergraduate at Williams College, he was a founding member of the ISI Conservative Club there. He was at Sharon when the conservative movement started Young Americans for Freedom at the Buckley Family Estate. A volunteer for Barry Goldwater in his 1964 campaign for Ronald Reagan's early campaigns, Jim tried his hand at engagement in conservative political activities. Notably, particularly for me, he was key to electing our late member, Dr. Philip M. Crane, Hillsdale class of 1953, to the United States Congress, which gave me a nice job for several years working with Phil. But Jim has served as Secretary of the American Conservative Union for more than 20 years, a key participant in virtually every CPAC meeting since they started. But Jim's primary contribution to the conservative movement has been as a friend, advisor, and publisher to so many of us. I've personally worked with him on about a dozen projects that produced hundreds of thousands, actually, of paperback books. On one occasion in the 1970s, one of our paperbacks had 28 different covers and 28 different forewords for each of the 28 members of the House who were co-authors. And there was a total press run, as I recall, of 200,000 copies of that book, which, when they were delivered, sat in my home garage until they were distributed around the country. Jameson also published a number of distinguished hardback books. Alas, the latter category includes one of my own books, which had a press run of closer to 200 rather than the 200,000. Today, in addition to his book publishing, Jim keeps in touch with hundreds of us through his very frequent emails on political issues and public policy questions. He has encouraged many of us to cross the bridge from thought to action, matching principle with participation. However, be forewarned, neither back then nor now can you call Jameson campaign during normal business hours. He is a night person whose normal business hours are roughly midnight to 7:30 a.m. Well, for me, it's like having to call Taipei or Seoul. So if you want to talk with campaign, you just kind of get used to it. When I was thinking about these remarks, I came across what one wag said about Albert J. Nock, and it seemed to me it really applied to Jim campaign. He said that Nock had a real place in a select gallery of American nonconformists whose legacy is their ability to irritate men into thought. That really describes our friend Jim campaign. He irritates us all into thought. Jameson campaign, on behalf of the members, the Board of Trustees, and the officers of the Philadelphia Society, it's my very great pleasure to present to you the very first Barron Award.
Many years ago, many years ago, the great political philosopher Wilmore Kendall used to drive his blind father, who was a Methodist circus preacher, through the dusty roads of Oklahoma. And one late Sunday afternoon, they stopped at the insane asylum to speak, state insane asylum in Oklahoma. And Wilmore's father got up and said to the assembled patients there, "Why are we all here?" And from the back of the room, someone said, "Because we're not all there." As a conservative movement, we are not all there. So I encourage you all to pitch in and engage in the sort of comradeship that has built this movement to where it is right now. Also, for our political candidates and our academics, please learn to speak the language of the people and not in abstractions, right, Ed? We're not communicating very well with the average American, so that is a major task. Thank you very much. I'm quite a surprise. All right.
You, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your lunch.
See, there's that telltale dinging of the glasses. Thank you, whoever that was. In a few moments, it will be my pleasure to introduce Miss Amity Schles as our luncheon speaker. But I have been asked by the Board of Trustees to apprise the attendees, membership, and guests of some interesting developments. As you know, we live in an unusual political season, and a most unusual turn of events has occurred that has some bearing on this society. It turns out that for the first time in its history, the Philadelphia Society has been solicited by presidential candidates for its official endorsement. In fact, not just this or that presidential candidate, but every presidential candidate still running has approached the Philadelphia Society and asked for official endorsement. So we thought it best to provide a glimpse of these communications with the candidates, and so here we go. The first, you might expect, the first solicitation we received was from Donald Trump. And this was in correspondence. This was in a letter. At first, everyone thought it was a prank, but I'll read you a portion of his letter. It begins thus, and again, I'm reading, so you'll excuse me. Dear Philadelphia Society or whatever, I want to make a deal with you guys to join my campaign. We're going to be huge, and it's going to be great, because we're winners. I hear you guys like to talk about liberty. Well, let me tell you, nobody can talk about liberty like I can. And I mean nobody. We're going to have some serious liberty. And I'm going to get tough with the Chinese and make them pay for it. You know, okay, we gave liberty to the world, and now it's time for us to get some of it back. So are you guys worried about all this Supreme Court stuff? When I'm president, I'm going to build a wall between the Supreme Court and the Democratic National Headquarters on Capitol Street. And it'll be great. The letter goes on in that vein. Now, oddly, the next solicitation was a handwritten note from Bernie Sanders. The writing was a bit shaky, but as near as we could make out, he actually picked up on there being interests here in the American founding. He said, now again, I'm reading, your society and I share a deep devotion to the founding of this great country. Uppermost in my mind is that terrific passage from the Declaration of Interdependence. To each according to his needs, from each according to his life, liberty, and property. It's strange. He goes on to suggest that legal means could be found for the Philadelphia Society to donate its endowment to his campaign. But if not, they would certainly be found once he were elected. Perhaps strangest of all, Bernie Sanders acknowledged that many society members probably do not belong to his own party, but nevertheless he felt he had the liberty to suggest the society change its name to the United States Society of Republicans, or USSR. He promised if we do that, he and his wife will attend our next annual meeting as part of a long overdue second honeymoon. Okay. Well, of course, we did receive a letter as well from the campaign of Senator Ted Cruz. That was the next one, in fact, to arrive, but it was composed not by the senator but by a staffer, because, as the staffer explained, Senator Cruz was filibustering his own mailroom. Convinced that bureaucracy begins at home, the senator steadfastly refuses to have anything to do with generating paperwork in his offices. Later, it turns out one of the society's officers was speaking with the senator personally, and that officer suggested that perhaps the staffer meant to use the word boycott rather than filibuster. Cruz replied, only hippies boycott, and he was determined to use processes appropriate to a constitutional framework. But then Senator Cruz displayed some of his famous intelligence by providing this society officer with an argument for endorsement, saying that as the only candidate with connections to both Canada and Cuba, clearly he fell squarely into the Middle American golden mean and thus met the Aristotelian criterion for virtue. Well, this was the hardest, most difficult of all. Hillary's request for endorsement actually came in a rather confusing array of emails. The first was from a National Security Agency account labeled Top Secret, but issued from her computer. It said, I want you to know that no one is more an advocate of all the things the Philadelphia Society holds dear than I am. Whatever those things are, they are my passion. I have fought for them my whole career, and I will continue to fight for them once I find out what they are. Whatever you hold dear, I hold dearer. Bill told me to say, I feel your dear, but I thought that a dear too far. Well, okay, so that was the first. Then another email arrived, this one from a CIA account, and it too was sent from her computer. Oddly enough, it began by saying, how do I know how we should do it? Just pin Libya on the Republicans and then tell me how it was done. The note broke off in mid-sentence, but was quickly followed by another email sent from a State Department account instructing us to destroy the previous message. Her final message to the Philadelphia Society came from an offshore bank account email service labeled Foundations Are Us. It arrived with a picture of Bill and Hillary smiling from a yacht that appeared to be shaped like the White House. The message was, I'm afraid, a little garbled and confused as it read, I want you to know that no one is more an advocate of all the things the Philippine Society holds dear than I am. Whatever those things are, they are my possession. I have fought for them my whole career, and I will continue to possession your society once I know what it is. Whatever you hold dear, I feel your Philippines. It went downhill from there. So as you can see, we have some very important deliberative work to do here at the Philadelphia Society in determining our endorsement. For those of you who say, but wait a minute, you said all the candidates sent letters. What about Kasich? The answer is, what about Kasich? Well, in this season of political turmoil, we are very fortunate to have with us this afternoon so articulate and insightful a writer and commentator as Emily Schles. A magna cum laude graduate of Yale, Ms. Schles has authored 4 New York Times bestsellers, The Forgotten Man, A New History of the Great Depression, The Forgotten Man Graphic, that's an illustrated version of the same, Coolidge, a full-length biography of a president who is probably too often himself a forgotten man, and The Greedy Hand, How Taxes Drive Americans Crazy. She has won the Hayek Prize from the Manhattan Institute and the International Friedrich Bastiat Prize for writing on political economy. Ms. Schles has been a J.P. Morgan Fellow, a Bradley Lecturer at the American Enterprise Institute, and has served on the Council of Foreign Relations. Her articles and essays have frequently appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, Bloomberg, the National Review, and other publications. Ms. Schles is married to journalist Seth Lipsky, and they have 4 children. Please join me in welcoming our speaker, Ms. Amity Schles.